one's guest.
Jan Ribars has spent the best part of the last two decades at the sharp end of journalism. As a reporter, he has travelled the world, witnessing the collapse of the Soviet Union, followed by the momentous political changes worldwide, and a series of tragic and brutal conflicts in Europe and Asia. Still only 37, Jan has now brought together some of his experiences in a richly illustrated book. It translates as Warriors, Terrorists and Other Madmen, a not entirely ironic title which reflects some of the extraordinary characters Jan has met over the years. To talk about the book, I went to meet Jan Ribars in the Prague offices of his newspaper, Mlada Fronta Dnes. He began by telling me about the rather dramatic start to his career, when he earned himself a place in the history books as one of eight people injured during the thwarted hardline coup in Moscow in August 1991. Jan has an unnervingly matter-of-fact way of telling the story.
I was simply shot. That's the story, and that's why I got into the history. Just to clarify it, I was just taking a photo of a dead man lying out of a personal carrier, and the gentleman sitting inside didn't like me taking the picture, didn't like the flash from my camera, and shot at me from inside. The question I'll never be able to answer is whether it was a chance that I was hit only by a blank, because the Russian soldiers were actually mixing real stuff with bullets and those without. So I don't know. It must have been Russian roulette.
I'd just like to read a short extract in my own rough translation from your description of the moment just after you'd been shot, where suddenly everything went black. Death didn't come. After 2 or 3 seconds, I discovered, to my great surprise, that I was in one piece and that my body seemed to be doing what I told it. I felt blood flooding down my cheeks. I turned away from the transporter. Someone handed me a bandage, and I wiped the blood from my face. My film ran out. I tried to put a new one in. It wouldn't work. The camera and the film had become stuck with blood and stopped working. Two women pulled me out from the crowd and offered to take a look at me at a flat nearby. I didn't want an ambulance. With an ambulance, you never quite know, especially at the moment of a military coup. And I ought to add that this description of what happened to you is illustrated by an extraordinarily dramatic photograph of you standing there on the square in Moscow, covered in blood. In fact, I remember from the time that photograph went around the world, didn't
That's
it?
That's true. An American photographer just took the picture, and without knowing that I'm not a Russian, so that picture just got circulated by Associated Press and got published, I think, basically anywhere in the world, because it was one of the most dramatic pictures of the night, which changed the history. But to add to that, when I was finishing that book, I decided I should try to find the guy who did it, who made the picture. And I really managed to get him. He is from California. His name is Michael Rondo. He's from San Jose Mercury News, which is really way away from Moscow and Czech Republic. And he sent me some more pictures, which actually helped me to clarify some mysteries of that night, because I was able to see at least the faces of two women who helped me that night. So after 17 years, I was able to look at their faces, which was quite a touching moment.
You were an extremely young man at the time. You were only 20. That really was, in terms of your career as a journalist, it was quite a baptism of fire, but you seem to have acquired really quite a taste for going into harm's way, to going to places that are dangerous. So many of the descriptions and the stories that you tell in your book are from war zones, from places where people are really tested to their extreme. What is it that appeals to you so much about going to these places? For example, Guantanamo Bay, Iraq, Afghanistan, Beslan after the massacre. What makes you want to visit these places?
In a way, I'm not that much attracted by the war zone as such. What fascinates me are simply situations and the moments when the history is being made. And that does not necessarily have to be the moment when somebody's shooting at somebody. It could be a crisis in Russia. It could be, you know, basically anything where the stories of people are just so interesting that it's just be shame not to work with them.
And there are some very harrowing stories I found incredibly moving. The chapter about the families of the children who were killed in Beslan, yes, in the Russian Caucasus back in 2004. And I'll read another brief extract from the book, which I've translated into English. A man lifted a child's coat out of the wet grass. For a while, he turned it around in his hands and then looked through the pockets. He found nothing. Quietly, I asked him, "Are you looking for your son's clothes?" He shook his head. "No, I'm looking for my son." A fragment of bone or jaw might have got caught in one of the pockets. "Then at last we'd be able to identify him," he said in a quiet, colourless voice, by now without emotion, but just pain. He gave a nod as he left and headed back to the ruins of the Beslan Sports Hall. The courtyard, ripped up by explosions, was still littered with little children's coats. How do you cope with situations like that?
Well, typically I'm trying to be, say, detached and separated from those tragedies, because I have two choices. Either you just got involved emotionally into that deeply and you'll get crazy sooner or later, or you just try to really be the medium. It means to be somehow not sharing the pain of the people. In Beslan, of course, it's not possible not to become emotionally involved, because it was so terrible that it was really, really, really tough.
I think the two extracts we've heard so far also say a lot about your style. It has this narrative power and simplicity at the same time. And I noticed, for example, in one of the essays in the book that you talk about bullfighting. And what immediately springs to mind is someone like Ernest Hemingway. And he also had this very clear, very simple style. Is he a writer who inspired you?
I wouldn't say he inspired me, but obviously I like him, I read him. The thing is, I'm in the business of writing for 15 years, and the longer you do it, the more clearly you know that you are writing a piece which has to have ambition to be written with some narrative styles of literature.
I notice again and again in your writing in this book that you choose subjects and you seek out subjects which kind of break stereotype, like the Taliban fighters who've never heard of Osama bin Laden, or you talk about bullfighting in Portugal, or you have a delightful account of going fox hunting in Britain. And this is another characteristic of your writing, that not only did you go and watch a fox hunt, you actually got up on a horse and joined in.
Yeah, I mean, it was too tempting when I got offered that I could do it, so I was happy that I can try the atmosphere of fox hunting.
So I'll read a little extract from your article about joining a fox hunt in Wiltshire in England. "Hunting is a ritual in which everything has its place. You have to be decently dressed. Your behaviour has to be even more decent. For a start, just try this: not to overtake the master and the master of foxhounds, not to kick another horse, not to let another horse kick you, not to tread on one of the hounds, not to break off the wing mirror of a farmer's car with your knee, not to go flying backwards into a ditch, not to barge into one of those surly lady riders, and to show enthusiasm about every possible subject that comes up. For example, the situation of Czechoslovak miners in the 1980s, which was a subject of great fascination for one of the riders dressed up in his hunting pink." The reason why you took part in that hunt was because of the impassioned debate in Britain at the time about whether fox hunting should be banned or not. And in the course of joining the hunt, you interviewed one of the more controversial and colourful characters on the British philosophical and political scene. That's the right-wing thinker, Roger Scruton. You're very drawn, aren't you, to people who are not mainstream?
Yes, I am, because I mean, anything which is mainstream is generally boring. So, I mean, why should I do a story about something which is just normal, ordinary? I always like to interview people who are interesting. And Roger Scruton, obviously, he says many things which some people don't like, or I should rather say they hate. But there are some moments when he was proven right after years, and I think he's an extremely interesting guy.
And, of course, you've also come in your career as a reporter to meet many powerful and influential politicians, including Tony Blair or even Vladimir Putin. With Vladimir Putin, he's such an enigmatic figure. What were your impressions?
Well, the impressions were exactly impressions of... which we were in line of what has been written and said about him, that he's just a tsar and a mortal, ordinary people would never dare and would never know much about him. So, yes, I've seen him a couple of times from distance of 2 meters, but obviously I never got closer to answering the question who the hell he is.
I would like to ask you as well about covering so much of the violent side of what's going on in the world. Is there not a danger as a journalist of succumbing to a certain machismo and a certain kind of macho reporting?
Yes, when you do that and you are 25 years old, you suddenly find out it's really charming to be telling your friends and girls, perhaps, how brave you were. Anybody and everybody who does that has a period when he just enjoys feeling that he's somebody, you know, he's macho, as you said. But, I mean, sooner than later, you realize that it's just, you know, basically pointless. And what remains is your attraction to, not that much to violence, because violence as such is, it's not certainly a nice topic, but to the power of stories.
And I should add that you tell stories not just in words, but also in pictures. You are also a photo reporter.
That's true. I am always saying that I'm a photo reporter by default, because when you travel to incredibly interesting places, that would be a shame not to take the pictures.
And I should add that your book, which would translate as, I suppose, Warriors, Terrorists and Other Madmen, is richly illustrated with your photographs. And we're talking to you here in the offices of your newspaper, Mladá Fronta Dnes. What's your next project?
Well, my next project is also my current project, and it's my first little child was born 2.5 months ago, so that's my essential project I'm trying to work in on, and I think it'll change my perception of the world quite dramatically. It's not to say that I'll stop traveling, but I'll certainly be paying much more attention to other things.
Jan Rybář, thank you very much indeed for talking to me about your fascinating book, Warriors, Terrorists and Other Madmen, which unfortunately our listeners can't read in English, but I hope at least I've managed to give you a taste of the book in the short extracts that I have translated. And best of luck, Jan, for the future.
Thank you very much.